Welcome to Let's Talk ETFs. I'm your host, Jason Kapoor, and I've been monitoring the investment space throughout my entire career. Here at Seeking Alpha, I'm an ETF strategist, and my role is to uncover and bring forward news and information to the investor community that is meaningful and actionable. Each week, a different guest and I will take an in-depth look at a particular aspect of the rapidly evolving exchange-traded fund space, with a focus on how investors can best utilize ETFs to reach their investment goals. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing said here should be taken as investment advice. All opinions expressed on this show are those of individuals expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be included at the end of this show. You can subscribe to Let's Talk ETFs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platforms you prefer.
For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on the afternoon of July 27th, 2021. In today's episode, we have a special guest joining us from Dawn Global, Moritz Pott. Moritz is the founder and CIO of Dawn Global, which is a recently launched organization covering active thematic ETF investing in emerging and frontier markets. Moritz has a degree from Middlebury College and University of Oxford. He has also been a public and private equity investor in both the emerging markets and frontier markets for the past 6 years, and has held previous roles at Vitol and Goldman Sachs. He's an expert in the investing space, and we're very excited for him to join us today to have an open discussion around the topic of emerging markets and how the ETF markets and how the ETF marketplace fits in. So without further mention, I'd like to welcome our guest, Moritz Pott.
Thanks, Jason. I'm very excited to be on your show. I look forward to the discussion. A lot to cover in EM, where a lot's happening today.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you taking your time out of your day to sit down and speak with us. But really kind of what we want to do to start everything off, and before we jump into all the details of our podcast today, do you think it would be possible if you could provide our listeners with a little bit more information about yourself and your background, perhaps a little bit more details around Dawn Global and things of that nature?
Sure. So I grew up in Europe. During high school in Europe, my interests were primarily in history, current affairs, and geography. I continued my education in the U.S. at high school and then college. I developed an interest in investing during high school in the U.S. I pursued that interest in EM and in history and geography through internships starting in my high school and summers in EM. Initially, I was a volunteer. I visited South Africa and then Brazil when I was in high school. And during college, I spent my summers working for a microfinance bank in Malawi, for the opposition party of the government in Zimbabwe under Morgan Tsvangirai, and also for an EM-focused investment fund out of London. These experiences at an early age gave me an appreciation for the opportunity, but also the complexity of doing business in EM and the role of the consumer in driving that growth and change. Back at college in the US, I studied liberal arts, which for me primarily meant international relations and development economics. What I realized is I needed to get professional training and experience before I could generally be effective and credible in EM. I started my working career at Goldman Sachs in natural resources M&A. I subsequently worked at Vitol in commodities trading. For the last 5.5 years, I've been investing in frontier and emerging markets as a public and private equity investor, traveling to these markets every quarter, engaging with companies, management teams, regulators, and with both local and foreign investors. This has given me obviously an insight into the companies, into the opportunities, and also into the different country dynamics in the countries I'm now focused on with my new firm, Dawn Global. Dawn Global listed the first ETF last month, the Asian Growth Cubs ETF. The Cubs ETF is the first active thematic ETF in the world focused on emerging and frontier market equities. Dawn is dedicated to investing in the next generation of EM, which we believe is not accessible through the index. Countries that are large, growing, are liquid, yet have low to no index inclusion, and therefore also low to no foreign shareholder representation. Dawn has concretely three core goals. And the first is to make next generation emerging market investing accessible, affordable, efficient, scalable, and research not benchmark driven. The second goal is to open up the next generation of emerging markets to investors through an easy to access structure, which we also believe has potential tax and other cost efficiencies, which is an ETF. We've identified a universe of a roughly 8 to 10 trillion market cap universe that has low to no ETF penetration today. We believe that universe covers some of the youngest, some of the fastest growing, but also some of the most digitally enabled and also some of the largest economies in the world. Thirdly, when we think about what is the approach Dawn takes, We look to take an actively managed, management engaged, benchmark agnostic, regionally not globally diversified, research driven, ESG compliant, and ultimately a commitment to quality, liquidity, transparency, and risk management. I think the recent events in China underscore the need to diversify EM exposure. The reality is it's very hard to achieve diversified EM exposure, and you don't get that in the index today.
Excellent. And it sounds like you got a well-versed background. And for someone that's going to be starting an EM fund with your background, it seems that the two are going to go hand in hand. And just for our listeners, I know, March, you just mentioned the China issue. I guess that's in reference to the overall regulatory crackdown that's going on in the Chinese tech space. Is that correct?
Correct. And I think you've seen it. It started in technology, but it's also now potentially extended to education. And I think, you know, previously that, you know, the concentration risk of China in the indices and therefore in the ETFs that track those indices has been flagged. But today there's been low to no effort to really diversify beyond that concentration risk. You've seen the emergence of ex-China indices, but in reality what that's done is that's basically concentrated exposure on Taiwan, on Korea, on India and Brazil. And ironically, some of the ex-China indices actually still have China exposure, because what they've added South Africa. In South Africa, the main position they've added is Naspers, and Naspers is one of the biggest shareholders in Tencent. So even the ex-China indices actually have material China exposure still.
Interesting. So before we jump into Dawn Global and the ETF that you guys have, I wanted to kind of get your general take on, I guess what you would say, the overall landscape for emerging markets and frontier market investing is. You know, for some of our listeners out there, if you could explain the difference between the two, you know, why an investor should care about this space, you know, what are some keynotes that someone should maybe take away from, you know, the EM space and, you know, things, you know, down that kind of sort of line.
So I think if you think about the emerging market versus frontier distinction, ultimately that's a distinction made by indices. I think, frankly, the distinctions are often quite flawed. If you look at the constituents of the frontier universe, it includes countries such as Iceland, such as Kuwait, but also countries such as Bangladesh. Frankly, I struggle to see the similarity between those three countries. That's why I, frankly, look beyond the index classification of these countries. When I look at EM more broadly, ultimately I'm looking at the economies of tomorrow. And for me, that means growth. And ultimately, what that means is EM investing is about investing today in the economies of tomorrow. Specifically, when I think about what are the key things I look at when I look at EM and what draws me to EM, I think there's a few criteria. And those include size, growth, demographics, digital adoption, and increasingly diversification. If you just take one each of those turn by turn, so if you look at size, EM today represents roughly 60% of global GDP. That's expected to reach 75% of global GDP in the next 15 years. If we move on to growth, if you look at EM today or FM today, some of the fastest growing economies historically and looking forward are within the emerging market universe. Emerging Asia has been and is forecast to be the fastest growing region globally for the next 6 years. You know, looking specifically at a few countries, there's only three countries in the world that have grown GDP for 40 consecutive years. Those are Bangladesh, China, and Vietnam. If you look at demographics, 85% of the world's population under 24 lives in EM. Amid stagnant population growth in the US, you still see vibrant population growth in emerging market countries. If you look at digital adoption, what you're seeing is that the proliferation of a young educated population has accelerated digital adoption in some of these emerging market countries. The confluence of a middle-class consumer population and rising smartphone penetration has kind of steepened the growth gradient in a lot of emerging market economies. Moving on to diversification. From an investment perspective, EM is seen as diversification. And the way most investors access EM is ultimately in a highly concentrated way through the index. Getting genuine liquid EM diversification is actually very hard. That is what that's what Dawn Global is focused on delivering to EM investors. I think lastly, I think I'd say that obviously the country that has the largest concentration in that index is China today. Depending on the index, it's somewhere between the high 30s or low 40s%. I think people increasingly realize that China is an opportunity, but also a risk. And I think people are looking to diversify beyond that concentration risk. Today, it's very hard to get any genuine diversification beyond that concentration risk. We are looking to offer that through Cubs.
Awesome. And I guess let's dive into Cubs. And I want to talk about the ETF that you guys have, and that's Asian Growth Cubs ETF, ticker CUBS. So your fund is recently launched, which I think, as you mentioned, it came out about a month ago. Can you talk to our audience about what Cubs is, the full scoop behind it, why it was launched, perhaps, you know, why it might be different than, say, a traditional EM ETF out there? I know you mentioned that you guys are the first actively manage the Matic ETF. So that's fantastic news. So maybe you could build upon that.
Sure. So the Cubs is in these young, it's going to be listed for less than 2 months, but it's very fundamentally different to any of the other ETFs in the emerging market space out there. The active thematic ETF school was ultimately invented by Bear Stearns in 2008. The asset class was slightly dormant until Cathie Wood has invigorated the asset class starting 2014-15 through ARK Invest. What we're looking to do is to apply some of the learnings from ARK Invest, but actually apply them to a different zip code, to different industries, and ultimately to different companies, which are in emerging and frontier markets. So Cubs is focused actually on what I would argue is the next generation of yen. And specifically, it's focused on five countries in Southeast Asia: Bangladesh, Indonesia, Pakistan, Philippines, Vietnam. Cubs, in my view, is an essential yet untapped part of most EM portfolios. And whilst previously Cubs could have been considered too small or too irrelevant, the growth of the Cubs countries has propelled Cubs to a size and relevance that can no longer be ignored in greater EM context. To give you just a bit of context, the collective GDP of Cubs is roughly 90% of that of India. The average smartphone penetration of Cubs has actually surpassed India in the past 3 years. The Cubs countries are expected to be amongst the fastest growing economies in the world for the next 6 years based on the latest IMF data. And the Cubs population today is over 860 million people, is expected to reach a billion people in the next 15 years. Yet the weighting of Cubs in the large EM indices is only 2% and therefore materially underrepresented. Looking at the economies within Cubs, what's interesting is that the Cubs economies are increasingly driven by services, not manufacturing, export-driven economies. This means that the growth you can see in Cubs is ultimately going to be more scalable, less capital intensive, and more dynamic. This is fundamentally different to some of the precedents you've seen, for example, in the Asian growth tigers in the 80s and 90s that were fundamentally driven by manufacturing export-driven growth. I think what beyond the theme or the countries, what actually importantly differentiates Cubs is the process. And I think there's a few layers to that. The first is that Cubs is an actively managed fund, which means that it has an investment portfolio, an investment process, that includes a top-down quantitative company screen and a bottom-up qualitative company analysis, coupled with a systematic portfolio framework. The top-down screen covers five criteria: ESG, size, liquidity, quality, and risk. The bottom-up analysis covers three key criteria, which is valuation, governance, and ultimately financial analysis. Engagement with management is key. And ultimately, when we think about Cubs, we focus not just on the horse, which is the company, but also on the jockey, which is the management team. What that means is that we underwrite the business model, we also underwrite the management team, we also spend time getting to know the both. Every single portfolio, every single management team in the portfolio today, we have spoken to before the product was launched. In a post-COVID world, we're resuming visiting these countries like I used to do in a pre-COVID world. We also have a commitment to ESG. We have a strict ESG lens, which means today that we exclude certain companies in certain industries. Going forward, we hope to adopt an ESG inclusion policy once the requisite data is available to support this approach. We speak to every company about ESG, and we intend to write a letter once a year to every management team about the importance of ESG in the greater context. I think beyond the actual process, I think you may ask yourself, why is Cubs not accessible today? And I think there's a few reasons. The interesting thing is, unlike in other EM countries such as China, India, and parts of Latam, Cubs has low to no ADR coverage. So the Cubs universe is 3,500 companies, but there's only 3 ADR listings. All 3 ADR listings are state-owned enterprises. I generally try to shy away from state-owned enterprises. I will talk about that a bit later. If you look at the ETF coverage, outside of Vietnam, there's low to no ETF coverage of these countries. For example, Bangladesh doesn't even have a single ETF. The last ETF in Bangladesh closed 15 months ago. But even within Vietnam, the ETFs that you have, for example, the VanEck ETF, they actually don't give access to the companies you want to be invested in Vietnam. Why? Because in a country like Vietnam, you have a foreign ownership restriction, which means that the regulator restricts the amount of the shareholding foreigners can have in a select number of strategically interesting, in many cases, high-performing companies. Well, that means if you buy the VanEck ETF, you actually over-index the SOEs, which again, I tend to avoid. What we've done is we've actually found a way to get around that, and I'll talk about that a bit later, that we actually are able to give investors access to the best companies in Vietnam through a local route we found. I think lastly, you may ask yourself, why do you not invest directly into these markets? And I think what people have found who've tried to invest directly into these markets is that it's very burdensome and it's very restrictive. And the issues include account opening, custody, clearing, brokerage. Frankly, for most investors, the hassle involved is just a bridge too far, and therefore they stick to the index, which frankly indexes primarily 80% to five countries. I think a question we may ask yourself is, why does the index not work? And I think what you've seen is that basically EM investing is historically driven by indices. And the size of the index-linked EM products shows how important these indices are. Of the five largest ETFs in the world, two are emerging markets focused, both with $80 billion under management each, which underscores the size of the EM index-driven universe. But what's interesting is that in EM, you could argue there's actually a much bigger mandate for active over passive management, given there's a smaller number of liquid quality companies in emerging markets versus developed markets. What that means actually is that you want to have an active lens when you look at these countries and you look at these economies. The benchmark-driven approach to EM investing, we believe, is broken. We believe there's a mandate for active management. Specifically, if you think about what is the issue with the EM indices, I think there's one or two issues. One is the concentration. So if you look at the key EM indices that track most of the funds that flow into mutual funds or ETFs, there's 80% concentration in only five countries. And that concentration has been roughly that level for the last 5 years, even though the composition of that concentration has changed. But I think the most important thing, and that's frankly a structural flaw, is EM indices, they market cap weight. And market cap weight basically leads to a portfolio that includes the largest companies in these countries, but not necessarily the fastest growing or the companies with potentially the highest growth potential or highest return potential. What's interesting is that if you again look at the EM ex-China indices, these still have an 80% concentration of five countries, and the five countries don't go beyond the initial five countries. They basically replace China with either Brazil or Russia. And frankly, you still have a highly concentrated portfolio to only just a select number of late stage, in some cases, maturing EM countries.
Awesome. Yeah, it seems that Cubs is kind of breaking down the walls and almost rewriting the way EM can be invested upon, you know, in terms of, you know, going with the active approach and, you know, investing in markets that traditionally you maybe either were not aware of or had barriers to get into. It seems like more of a streamlined process for an investor who's looking to get clear-cut exposure to certain areas. You know, here's the avenue, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I think the view we take is the index is not going to reform. EM investors, they want diversification. They can't get it for the index. In order to go to the next generation emerging markets, you need an active lens. If you don't have an active lens, you index to the economies of yesterday. That means you index to steel, tobacco, telco, banks. We're focused on the economies of tomorrow. We're focused on industries such as healthcare, TMT, FMCG, and fintech or digital banking. And ultimately, we believe that you need, again, an active lens to access that next generation of companies and industries in these next generation emerging markets.
Awesome. So yeah, can we take a little bit of a deeper dive into Cubs? You know, perhaps you could provide us with some of the fund's specs in terms of, you know, perhaps some of the key holdings, expense ratios, how often the fund is actually adjusted, you know, highlighting some key holdings that might really drive the ETF, things that our audience might be keen to learning about.
Sure. So, you know, the ETF is focused on liquid, quality, growing, ESG-compliant companies with dominant local market shares. We have strict country and industry limits to manage single country and single company risk, which we realize is a concern for many EM investors. The goal is long-term investing through compounding. So we try to minimize the trading activity given the cost of trading in these markets. If we go through the, you know, examples of holdings by country, in Bangladesh, an example would be Renata, which is a local leading local pharma company in Bangladesh, but also has a growing global footprint. In Indonesia, Bank Jago, which is a leading digital bank in Indonesia, is the exclusive financial services platform for Gojek and Tokopedia, which you may be aware of is the largest technology ecosystem in Indonesia. Gojek and GIC are already shareholders in Bank Jago. It's only been listed for the past few years. In Pakistan, we look at Systems. It's the leading software company in Pakistan. Again, an example of an emerging local company with a growing international dollarized revenue base. Systems is also a good example of a company where liquidity and size are no longer correlated in EM in the same way that investors historically were used to being. Systems, to give you an idea, is a company with less than a half billion market cap, but it has amongst the highest daily trading liquidity of companies in Pakistan today. In Philippines, we look at Converge ICT, which is a Warburg Pincus backed leading cable fiber optic player. Dominant fiber optic market share, which we believe will benefit from growing digitalization in the economy. In Vietnam, instead of talking about a company, we can maybe talk about the approach, which I mentioned earlier, about how we get around the foreign ownership restrictions. The Cubs ETF is investing in the Diamond ETF, which is a locally listed ETF in Vietnam, offering exposure to some of the best companies in Vietnam, which are foreign ownership restricted, which includes a bank, a technology company, a jeweler. And ultimately, the Cubs ETF swallows the cost of investing in this ETF. So there's no incremental charge to Cubs investors. And the reason why we invest in this ETF is that, as I mentioned before, the best companies in Vietnam have a foreign ownership limit. That limit, in most cases, is full. If you want to buy into those companies, that means you have to buy the material premium from other foreign shareholders. That's something that we don't think is justifiable. Therefore, we basically have found a way to get around that foreign ownership limit by investing in the Diamond ETF. This is, again, something that you will not get if you invest in, for example, the VanEck Vietnam or other Xtrackers ETF. I think if you look at, you know, the countries more on a more higher level, what's exciting also is the kind of reform that you've seen in some of these countries through by local regulators in an attempt to encourage global investors to come to these markets and to also encourage local before global listings. I think nowhere is that more evident than Indonesia. Indonesia, I think you have like a healthy pipeline of 10 plus unicorns today. Those are expected to increasingly list locally before globally. The best example, the next example is Bukalapak, which is scheduled to IPO later this month. It's a large IPO in Indonesia in a decade. And again, it's listing locally before globally. It's a dominant e-commerce player outside tier one cities in Indonesia. We expect to see this also happen in other markets. For example, in Pakistan, you've seen quite a vibrant IPO pipeline, and that's also being facilitated through local regulatory reform. I think talking about the mechanics of the fund, the expense ratio is 99 basis points, which is the cheapest fee for any actively managed fund focused on the region we've come across. All other active funds are in a triple digit range. The interesting thing is that the passive index-driven ETFs focused on the region charge anywhere between 59 and 90 basis points, which shows you actually how expensive the passive funds are in the region. The performance in most cases has been relatively underwhelming. From a portfolio construction perspective, the portfolio is equally weighted, semi-annually balanced, and we do that primarily from a risk mitigation point of perspective because we worry that we are aware of the fact that investors are conscious about concentration risk, conscious about country risk in EM, and we believe that's the best way to manage those risks from an investor perspective. Don't know if that gives you a bit of color.
No, absolutely. I'm glad we were able to break it down a little bit and, you know, from a step-by-step basis, giving us some country highlights as well as just some overall specs of the actual ETF. And I guess taking it even a further step forward, you know, let's just say a person is listening or is interested in, you know, maybe putting Cubs into their portfolio. Where do you see it fit in a traditional portfolio? Do you see this as something that will essentially take place of, say, an EM ETF that someone might have? Or do you see it as an additional piece? You know, where would you think that it fits in terms of the overall construct of a, you know, stock portfolio?
Sure. So I think ultimately this is like, you know, Cubs fits in as a key diversification to any EM portfolio. And the irony is, again, that, you know, people go to EM for diversification, but then the exposure they, in many cases, get to EM is actually highly concentrated. Conventional EM investing has been benchmark-driven. Again, as I mentioned before, the benchmarks are heavily skewed to only a small number of countries, which in many cases are large, maturing, often commodity price exposed. Cubs is focused on the next generation of EM, which has low to no inclusion indices. And therefore, it's a critical diversification and complement to existing EM ETFs. Cubs today is too large to ignore, evidenced by the benchmarking I mentioned earlier to India. Cubs is a long-term hold. It's a diversification for the next generation of EM. It's not a short-term trade. We don't believe there's a window. We believe these are countries that, you know, have long-term growth potential, where the early stages of realizing that growth potential. And ultimately, Cubs is also a critical diversification away from overweight China exposure in the indices. China is roughly 40% of the index. Cubs is roughly 2% of the index. The index is not going to increase the weighting of Cubs. We believe you need to add Cubs to your portfolio to get the Cubs exposure and to mitigate the China overweight exposure. Ultimately, what does Cubs focus on? Young, growing, digitizing economies.
Awesome. And I guess taking a step back from more of a general point of view, I think we went in detail of some of the key attributes and highlights of Cubs. But what do you think some of the biggest challenges the ETF might face in the emerging market space, you know, as a whole?
So I think there's obviously, you know, within Cubs, I think the biggest challenge is actually attracting foreign investors back to these markets. Foreigners have been net sellers in these markets for the past 6 years. They've generally stuck to, you know, larger, later stage EM countries such as the BRICS, or they've basically stayed in developed markets. And what has happened is that it's basically depressed valuations. And as a result of foreigners selling in these markets, the marginal buyer in these markets is now a local buyer, no longer a foreign buyer. I think within EM, it's quite hard to generalize across regions, but I think some of the key challenges vary from political instability in LATAM, regulatory risk in China, potential taper tantrum risk in fiscally fragile Middle East, North African markets, the resurgence of COVID in parts of EM. But generally, Cubs are in a solid and much better fiscal monetary position than in 13. And ultimately, we believe that Cubs is in an exceptionally placed position relative to most of EM, especially EM beyond the core index countries. If you think about like with EM, what is the most compelling opportunity? I think the Cubs is probably the most compelling place within EM. Where we see this is, I think, it's the opportunity to basically invest in some of the fastest growing digitally enabled economies in the world before foreign investors return to these markets at historically depressed valuations, despite the resilient growth throughout the COVID cycle.
Great. Yeah. And I guess playing a little bit of devil's advocate with you, what would you probably say to someone who might not be a full-on believer in emerging markets? They may say EM's rallied, during the COVID pandemic, but, so as most things, if we look at EM, say over a 10-year period, you'll see returns, somewhere in that 15, 20% range, give or take a few points. And, when you annualize that out, it's not really the stellar returns that one might think. Why should I invest in this now? What's different today? And, why should I come forward to Cubs or EM as a whole?
Sure. So I think EM has had a lackluster decade. And I think for a number of reasons that are understandable, but it's not clear that those reasons are necessarily repeatable. We believe that the lens of EM investing should ultimately define not by months or quarters or years, but ultimately by decades. And that's also how we looked at our back-tested returns. I think if we think about why, what are the concrete reasons why we've had a disappointing decade in EM? I think one has been the strong dollar. I think there's we don't focus on macro forecasting, but I think there's a question in the market today whether dollar strength is expected to continue. We would expect that a weaker dollar should benefit emerging markets overall. I think it's an important point to note that FX appreciation across emerging markets varies widely. So, for example, in Nigeria or Egypt, you've had a major FX devaluation every 5-10 years. But if you look at the Cubs, you've actually lost less in FX since 2000 than you would have otherwise in Brazil, Russia, and India. Now, obviously, the yuan has been the best performing EM currency, but it's an actively managed currency. So I'm not sure if you want to compare it in EM currency analysis. I think the second point in EM is that a number of EM countries, but not the Cubs, are very commodity price exposed. And obviously, commodity prices have been subdued for the majority of the past decade, which has had an impact on local economic growth, but ultimately on local markets. And you see this specifically in countries such as Brazil and Russia. And you look at the performance in the past decade, it's been a difficult decade for those countries. I think thirdly, as I mentioned before, passive investing, we don't believe works in EM. You need to find an active approach to find the best and right companies and to avoid state or enterprises. I mean, to take an interesting example, if you look at the MSCI EM index in 2010, the top five holdings were China Mobile, Petrobras, Gazprom, Samsung, and TSMC. China Mobile, Petrobras, and Gazprom are state owned enterprises. In the following decade, they returned between 0% and -3%. Ultimately, they were not investors you want to be associated with. Samsung and TSMC ultimately performed very well. What does I think this shows is that you can't partner with SOEs in EM if you're focused on generating investment returns in these markets. I think a fourth thing to note is in a lot of these markets, as I mentioned, the next generation specifically, they've seen foreigners being net sellers for the past decade. I think there's at this stage, there's limited capacity for further foreign selling, which also reduces the downside valuation pressure. If we look at the Cubs portfolio, the average valuation today, if we look at the valuation today over the 10-year average, 60% of the portfolio is below the 10-year average, which I think underscores the relative valuation position of the portfolio. The marginal buyers in these markets today are locals. Foreigners have not returned yet. They will return. Ultimately, if you think about index construction, we think that's also a fifth flaw in EM investing, and why we've obviously had lackluster returns. The market cap weighting approach biases to size, not to growth or returns outlook. Again, what's interesting is that if you'd basically bought the Cubs country indices in January 2000, as well as the S&P 500, the MSCI World, the MSCI EM, and the largest index in China and India, you would have actually made materially more money in Cubs than any of the aforementioned indexes after dividends in dollar terms, which again underscores, I think, the opportunity to invest in the Cubs countries. And that's obviously on an index level without the active lens. I think longer term and more broadly, I think what this also shows is you need to be long term in EM and you need to be selective in EM. And buying the global index has been an underwhelming experience for the past decade in EM. And frankly, we don't expect that to change for the outlook going forward.
Awesome. Yeah. And I know we could obviously talk about this, or at least I could talk about this all day long. I think you could as well. But we are kind of wrapping up our podcast and getting towards the end. And we always like to give our guests kind of, I guess you could say, the last foot. You know, anything that you want to mention, perhaps that we didn't talk about today, doesn't have to be anything specific to Cubs. It can be, but kind of wanted to get your last thoughts. And also if you could share with our audience some information about where they could find you, Dawn Global, if they want to learn more information about Cubs, you know, things of that nature as well.
Sure. So I think, well, first of all, Jason, thanks for having me today. I think the one thing about emerging markets, to recap, again, it's investing today in economies of tomorrow. By 2030, Standard Chartered expects 7 of the 10 large economies in the world to be emerging market economies, which I think underscores the opportunity, but also the relevance of EM. Getting that exposure to EM today is actually very hard, especially on the diversified way. We are looking to offer that in an actively managed, diversified way. Where do you find information? We are cognizant that people receive too many emails. So we focus on actually publishing our research online through our website. Through social media, we participate in podcasts, webinars, other audible, visual, other forms of engagement with interested parties, with investors, or with, you know, people who follow our research. For us, the key is on delivering succinct insights into these markets and on the product what investors want to hear, which is also, I think, different from what you get from existing ETF channels. Yeah, we have a fact sheet, but frankly, we're focused on research-driven insights into these markets that hopefully get people comfortable with the markets. And what we ultimately also include is a monthly themes report, a quarterly investment letter, and also a quarterly webinar.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that concludes this episode on emerging markets and frontier markets. I want to thank our guest from Dawn Global, Moritz Popp, for joining us today, as well as our listeners joining in. But until next time, this is your host, Jason Kapoor, signing off. For disclosure purposes, Jason Kapoor is not long any ETFs discussed. Moritz Pott is long Asian Growth Cubs ETF, ticker CUBS.